All right. Thank you for joining us. It looks like we have a good number of people online now, so we can begin and hear more about Mexico. So my name is Michelle Belorchi, and if we could go to the next slide real quick. My name is Michelle Belorchi, and I am pleased to be joined by an alumni who was a Fulbright Scholar to Mexico. Next slide, please. Yes, Dr. Dennis Plain, who's a professor of politics and department chair at Juniata College. He was a Fulbright Garcia Robles Scholar in 2019-2020. And I also have the Mexico Commission, known as COMEXIS, Jackal Tanelorn, who is a program officer, as well as Marin McDivitt, who's the communications outreach coordinator. So we have lots of people to hear from today, and we will be exploring some of the award opportunities, looking at awards for teaching and research in Mexico at a variety of institutions, as well as hear from Dr. Plain about his experience in Mexico City. So just again, for those of you that are just joining us, the webinar today is focusing on opportunities for faculty to teach and research in Mexico. So if you are a recent college graduate or you've recently completed a master's degree, please visit the Fulbright Student Program website for those opportunities. This is strictly for scholars and academics who are affiliated with U.S. institutions who are interested in teaching and researching in Mexico. All right, so let's begin. I want to share a little bit of background and history about the Fulbright program. We're actually getting ready to celebrate 75 years of the program next year. So this is an exciting time for the program. And keep in mind the opportunities that we're looking at in this webinar today are for the fall of 2021 and the spring of 2022. Now, the Fulbright program has partnered with about 160 countries around the world to provide opportunities for students and scholars, artists, professionals, and artists, musicians, lawyers, everyone from different backgrounds who would be able to teach and research and study in different countries. So this is really a public diplomacy program to foster mutual understanding and connect people around the world. Ultimately, we hope that the program improves lives. It was established in 1946 by Congress, and it is considered the flagship international educational and cultural exchange program. We at IIE administer the program on behalf of the Department of State, and I'd like to also mention that there are several countries that partner with us and contribute to the funding of this program. So it's certainly highly leveraged and of importance to a lot of countries around the world. There's a big interest in bringing American scholars and professionals into the classroom, into the field, as well as sending their scholars and students to the United States. Okay, so this actually is the diversity and inclusion statement from the State Department. So it's very important. It's one of the key components in our outreach strategy and recruitment strategy that the program reflect the diversity of American society. And so we're very keen on bringing this opportunity to a broad swathe of American campuses, professional organizations, and ensuring that certainly everyone is welcome and eligible as long as they meet the basic eligibility requirements. So regardless of their race, their national origin, their sex, their religion, their geographic location, et cetera. So this is something that is a key component to the outreach and recruitment strategy in partnership with the State Department. So in terms of the program that we're talking about today, specifically the U.S. Scholar Program offers about 800 spots, grants, you could say. And then we do have the Visiting Scholar Program, the U.S. Student and Foreign Student Program, as well as Foreign Language Teaching Assistance. So altogether, there are several thousand Fulbrighters that make their way around the world and to the U.S. So specifically today we're talking about opportunities for scholars. There are administrator awards available as well, and that is through the Scholar Program. Okay, so in terms of the baseline eligibility, if we could go to the next slide. In terms of the baseline eligibility, U.S. citizenship is required. And then after that, it really depends on the award description. So whether there's a PhD or terminal degree required, or number of years of experience in terms of teaching, all of that will be stated in the award description. So it's important to take a look in the catalog of awards, in the award description that you're interested in, to see what specific profile of applicant that they are looking for. So, and then also, if you have been a previous Fulbrighter, we ask that you wait 2 years from the time that your grant ended to the time that you reapply. Okay. All right. So moving on now to the opportunities in Mexico. We do have several awards that offer up to 26 grants. So there are 7 awards in the catalog that have sometimes more than one grant available. So we'll be discussing those in detail. We also have an award that is available for research in Canada and Mexico, and that's called the Fulbright Carlos Rico Research Award. So if there's projects of trilateral interest, that would be a great opportunity for applicants to consider. And then the other thing I'd like to point out is that some of the awards are placed, while others are open to the applicant determining or identifying a potential host institution. And there's also awards that are open to all disciplines, as well as some that are, you know, specifically for STEM or the social sciences and humanities. We do have awards for postdoc as well as more senior scholars, so certainly all level of academics are welcome to apply. And there are a couple of awards that don't require language proficiency, but please check if there is an intermediate or advanced level of Spanish proficiency required. Oftentimes it'll be either recommended or required. And then we have support from the Fulbright Commission in Mexico, known as COMEXIS, and so Jackal will be able to share a little bit about how COMEXIS interacts with grantees once they're in country. And then last but not least, there is a regional travel grant available, and that's something that's kind of a grant benefit that is open to grantees once they're in Mexico. They're eligible to apply for an opportunity to travel within the region to attend a conference or something similar in that nature, but not to conduct research. All right, so these are the award opportunities, and I want to just make note that all of the award opportunities are called Fulbright Garcia Robles Awards, and they are named actually after Alfonso Garcia Robles, who was a Mexican diplomat and politician, and he actually won the Nobel Peace Prize. And so Jackal can share a little bit more maybe about that, but I hope I've captured in essence that he was a very important man and did a lot for gaining peace in the country, I believe in the 60s and 70s, and so the commission has named the awards in honor of Garcia Robles, and so you'll notice that's the term, but keep in mind it is part of the Fulbright program, so sometimes we get questions, oh, I want to apply to the Fulbright Garcia program, the Garcia Robles program. It's still within the Fulbright Scholar program, right? So going to the specific awards, we have the Border Scholar Award. And Jackal, I think I'd like to actually, if you have anything to chime in, I think this is one of the most exciting awards in the catalog because of the nature. I mean, this can only be offered really with Mexico or Canada, but it allows the scholar to kind of live, you know, maintain their residence in the U.S. And again, it's open to those that live in the bordering states, so California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, to conduct research and teach in a Mexican institution along the border. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about that, Jackal? Okay, we can maybe catch up with you later. So the Border Scholar Award, again, is just for those applicants that are based in the states that I mentioned. So that would be a great opportunity that is also open to all disciplines, but the idea is that the teaching and research would focus on the bilateral relationship and the kind of border issues between U.S. and Mexico. And then we have the... Yes, there you are. Sorry. Hi, Jackal.
Hi. So a couple of things. One, thank you for all of this introduction. Fulbright was developed in the United States, and then Mexico, it was actually issued out of the embassy in Mexico 2 years later. But COMEX is actually was founded in 1990, and that's why it blended with the Alfonso Garcia Robles name, so that it was a merge between the two nations, so that it was Fulbright who had led this effort in the United States, and then Garcia Robles who was a Nobel Peace Prize winner. So that's how the, you know, just to give a little bit more background. And the Border Scholar Award is a travel allowance, so it's not like the other awards in that you don't stay in Mexico for the 9 months, but it's for those who are studying border issues, relationships to the border. As we all know, the Mexico-U.S. border is rich in its own level of it's its own nation in a way. So we have this award so that we can support scholars who are still working at their university in the California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas region, and then they can cross over and do research at one of the states, except for Tamaulipas, that is in a travel warning area in the border region. That's it.
Great, thank you. And then moving on to the postdoc award, that is open to all disciplines, so projects that are in all disciplines. That is a research-only award for applicants who have recently completed a doctoral degree. So that's a great opportunity for those of you that are finishing up your degree or have recently finished and are looking for an opportunity to conduct some research for 3 to 9 months in Mexico. And there's up to 4 of those grants available. And then we have the 2 other main awards specifically that are open to any affiliation, really, the Science and Technology and the Social Sciences and Humanities Awards. And those are also open to research, teaching, and a combination of teaching and research. Those are open to academics except early career. So how we define early career is those that have completed their PhD within the last 5 years. So if you are at the assistant level, assistant professor level, but your PhD was more than 5 years ago, you're welcome to apply. But if it's within 5 years, and Jackal, correct me if I'm wrong, because we want to make sure that that 5-year mark is clear for applicants. Again, it's not necessarily intended for senior scholars, but it's not necessarily for junior faculty. So that's essentially the Science and Technology and the Social Sciences and Humanities Awards. And it looks like there are up to 5 each for those. And take a look for more information. Those are also 3 to 9 month opportunities. And then the last 2 that are listed there are the PLACED Awards, the TEFL, the Teaching English as a Foreign Language, and the U.S. Studies Professorship Chair. So both of those, for either of those, the applicant should not seek out an invitation letter. The Fulbright Commission, COMEXIS, will determine where the applicant, the grantee, will be the best fit. And that specifically for the Teaching English, that's a teaching or teaching research award, the TEFL award, and then the U.S. Studies award is specifically a teaching-only award. Jackal, was there anything you'd like to add about the placement or specifically about those awards?
Well, one thing I want to say is when you say junior faculty, I want to make sure that people who have are right on that borderline where they don't know if they would qualify as a postdoc or you know, senior faculty, if they consider themselves junior faculty, that we do, you know, like if you're on that 5-year mark, please go ahead and apply to the Science and Technology or Social Sciences and Humanities Award. it's not open just for senior scholars and chairs and people like that. It's for all levels. The teaching English as a foreign language, just what I want you to know, sometimes people get turned off by the idea that it's a placed program. But we want our grantees to be happy and successful. So we will work with you on where you would prefer to be placed, what you think your preference is. We don't want you, you know, getting baked in the sun in Yucatan if you're not willing to for that. But we've placed people very successfully in many different places throughout Mexico, and it's always really, really well accepted. One of the other things I'd like to say about the TEFL Award is capacity building. So when we talk about teaching and or research, one of the things we're really looking for here is capacity building. In Mexico, we have what's called normales, which are the universities that teach teachers. And so a lot of times we want people to be able to go into those situations and build capacity for the people who will be teaching English to students here in Mexico. Regarding the U.S. Studies Chair, Dennis was in this position, so he can talk more from that personal experience. But Spanish is not required. You teach in English, and it's literally to teach something in your field about U.S. U.S. history, U.S. politics. We have a person this year that's teaching about U.S. architecture, and we've had a lot of very successful, diverse U.S. studies chairs. So we have four contracts with different universities here. You're welcome to reach out to them and look at those to see if they have an interest in what you would like to teach, to see if you're a good fit. And you can put your preferences. So you could put 1 to 4 about who you would like. That could change later on. But, you know, we try to, again, work with you in what we call doing a match so that it's a good fit for both you and the university. That's it.
Great. Thank you, Jackal. And I think our alumnus, Dennis, will be able to share more about his experience because he was on a placed award. So we'll be hearing from him shortly. But moving on to the next slide, the last award that I'd like to talk about is the Fulbright Carlos Rico Award for North American Studies. So this is what we call a multi-country award. It allows the scholar to conduct research in both Mexico and Canada. And this is a wonderful opportunity to propose a project to enhance collaboration between the two countries and propose something that's trilateral in nature. The award placement, the host institutions can include universities, government agencies, or research institutions, so it's not restricted just to universities. It's open to a wide range of disciplines that relate to, that have a North American kind of theme to them. So the focus of the projects can certainly be, you know, it can vary, but it should promote collaboration and add value to the trilateral relationship shaped, you know, with all of our borders and the current events and things like that. Specific interest, per the award description, and Jackal, feel free to chime in with some samples of previous grants, but specifically they're looking for projects that focus on North American regionalism, governance, trade and policy, indigenous issues, energy, health, and environmental issues, and migration and identity. So that's just to name a few, but and I do have in one of the slides, I'll show you a title from one of the recent projects. But again, there's up to 2 grants for this research award, and the anticipation is that there will be equal time spent in both Mexico and Canada. So total, the scholar has 4 to 10 months, so it can be 2 months in each or up to 5 months in each country. Is there anything else, Jackal, that you'd like to add about the Fulbright Carlos Rico Award?
Just to give, you know, some ideas about what different grantees, first of all, it is up to 2 grants. We have had years that we haven't accepted any Carlos Rico, because it really does have to have both a Canada and Mexico impact. That's very, very important for both of our countries. And the other thing is that it really opens, especially in the environmental sciences, where people want to talk about waterways. We had one really impressive grantee who was studying how the water along the Pacific coast impacted different coastlines throughout Canada and Mexico. We've also had migration projects that focus on how migration and LGBTQ or lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, queer peoples are impacted by migration in both Mexico and Canada, and definitely Indigenous rights and how those are impacted. Recently, we just had one about forestry and people's autonomy in that regard. So it is open to quite a wide range, and I just hope that people really, if you're interested in that North American aspect, apply to this grant. It's a really unique opportunity.
Excellent. Thank you, Jekyll. All right, so we can now turn it over to Dennis, Dr. Dennis Plain, who recently returned from Mexico. So Dennis, I'd love to turn it over to you and tell us about your path to Fulbright and share a little bit about what your experience was as the Fulbright Garcia Robles U.S. Studies Chair at ETAM.
Sure. So my path to Fulbright really started, I don't know, a long time ago, knowing that Fulbright was sort of this premier academic exchange program sponsored through the State Department. So I've always had it in the back of my head that that I wanted to do it. Then I was sort of up for a sabbatical and trying to figure out what to do. And I also wanted to make sure that I found a place where I could take my family. I have two preteens, so I wanted to have sort of a cultural, international experience with the whole family. And I'd had a little bit of Spanish, but not much. And so I started narrowing down where we wanted to go. And you know, I study American politics. Excuse me. Specifically, I look at public opinion and Americans' attitudes about government and civility and polarization and these sorts of issues. So I knew it had to be something that related to American politics. And I think with a lot of the research grants, you know, you might go to Mexico to study, you know, Mexican politics or whatever, but I was looking for a place where I could go and not necessarily study Mexican politics so much as share my experience with American politics. And so that's how I wound up with the Fulbright through Mexico. Are you still with me?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, great. My screen changed. So
oh, goodness. Okay.
So that's sort of my path to Fulbright, you know, again, looking for that international experience where I could bring my family. And, you know, part of bringing the family is I had to find a place where it was affordable to live. My wife took a leave of absence from her job, and, you know, so Mexico fit all that bill, and it was really a perfect placement for us. And in terms of my experiences at ETAM, and in Mexico, it was just fabulous for me and for the whole family. You know, the Mexican students at ETAM were fabulous and great to work with and super helpful and friendly. And, you know, of course, there was a lot going on in U.S. politics at the time. You know, at that time, it was all about impeachment and what that meant. And so really helping Mexicans navigate this this really impactful impeachment process in the United States was really a meaningful experience.
I can imagine it was an interesting time to be there. Dennis, could you share a little bit about what it was like to teach students there and what impressed you about your students and your colleagues there?
Sure. So I was in the International Studies department at ETAM, so I had students who were mainly interested in international politics, international relations, maybe going into the Foreign Service, some students who were interested maybe in international business, and they were engaged. They spoke English very fluently. I really had no communication issues. And they were just, they were really, you know, all of the world to some extent is captivated by the United States and what's going on in U.S. politics right now. Donald Trump is a little bit of an enigma. So people are trying to figure out, you know, what it is that Americans like about him, what they don't like about him. And so they just peppered me with questions that were really fascinating to try to explore about understanding what's going on in the United States right now.
Great. So Dennis, we had a question for you. Did you conduct any research or was it only teaching? And if it was only teaching, how many courses did you teach?
So my grant was only teaching. And so I taught two courses in the fall. Last semester I taught the U.S.-Mexico-Canada relations course. And then I taught sort of an American politics course. And so I did a little bit of research sort of on my own, but that's really just sort of working on some projects I had going on in the background. That's not really part of the grant. So, you know, my experiences in Mexico were really primarily about teaching. And what was so nice for me, you know, Juniata, you know, I'm the department chair and I'm involved in campus government and I'm on this committee and that committee. But in Mexico, I could really do what I love to do the most, which is focus on teaching. So I could put all of that sort of stuff behind, work on polishing my lectures, reading about especially U.S.-Mexican relations so I could help the students navigate these. And so I think that answers the question.
Great, yes. And Dennis, could you speak a little bit about, because you were in the U.S. Studies Chair Award that is a placed award, so could you speak a little bit about how, because we have applicants on the line who are asking, how do I put together a project statement and I don't know where I'll be?
Well, that's, I would say it felt like a challenge in the end. It really became more of an opportunity. You know, I put together my project based on, you know, what I wanted to do, what I thought I wanted to bring back to my students. You know, in terms of American politics, you know, we could have a debate about whether U.S.-Mexico or U.S.-Canada relations, sorry, U.S.-Mexico or U.S.-China relations are the most central, but certainly U.S.-Mexico relations are central to understanding what's going on in politics today in the United States. So I wanted to be able to bring back, you know, a better understanding from the Mexican perspective of how they see these issues of immigration and trade. You know, we were also conveniently sort of renegotiating NAFTA while I was down there. So it was really an amazing time to be on the other side of the border. Now, in terms of it being a placed position, you know, I think it was a little bit scary, maybe more so for my family, by trying to convince them to be on board with going to a place in Mexico, but we don't know where, and it could be one of these five. But, you know, when we looked more closely, all five of them looked like they would be fascinating places to spend a semester. And so we sort of trusted the process. And yes, as Jackal said, I had to rank my list, and you know, sitting down with my wife, we came up with a ranking. And you know, I was not given my top placement, and but I'm just so thankful that that did not happen, because I think Comexis really understands what each of these Mexican institutions who are part of this consortium, what each of them is looking for. And so they were really able to find the perfect placement for me. and the perfect placement for ETOM. And, being in Mexico City, being at ETOM, I couldn't have asked for a better placement for me or for my family.
Wonderful. So, Jackal, looks like Comexis, that's some great positive feedback. And could you speak, either of you, about how what the interaction was like in terms of outside speaking engagements? I know Dennis said that he spoke at the Benjamin Franklin Library. So if you could speak about how those opportunities come up for grantees.
Right. Well, at least in Mexico City, I mean, it's there for anybody in any of the placements that we have, but of course Comexis is based in Mexico City, and so it's a lot easier for us to collaborate and make things happen in the city. So for this particular situation, the Democratic primaries had taken off, and the library was interested in doing a kind of monthly session speaking tour on different aspects of the American political system and how we voted in our primary candidates into the presidential election. And so Dennis came to mind right away because of his area, and he was very engaged throughout his grant, not just in his particular placement at ETOM, but in the cultural activities that we presented. So we had a really good chance to get to know him. And I think that it was really popular, and so we have a really good relationship with the Benjamin Franklin Library, which is run by the U.S. Embassy here in Mexico, and it was a really, really successful event. But like I said, we aren't in other cities. We're not in Guadalajara, which is it's one of the three biggest cities in Mexico. We're not in Puebla, which is a very also metropolis kind of you know, small town but big atmosphere place, and Veracruz, which is the other place that we have a U.S. studies chair. But they all have their own connections, and so if you want to be engaged in public speaking, there are going to be a lot of opportunities. And also, like Dennis said, if you have your own recent research interest that you want to pursue, you can do that, but basically it's not part of the application, and you do it on your own time, you know, like we all really do. So just that, those are the opportunities.
Great, excellent. So let's take a look at the question box and see if there's anything we can ask Dennis or Jackal. Let's see, we've got a lot of questions coming in. All right, Jackal, this looks like for you. I'm in Mexico City right now. Could I contact the staff in Mexico with specific questions? So what order of you know, what process should be followed, Jackal?
Okay, well, regardless if you're in Mexico City or not, because we're not in the office right now because of the COVID virus, we're all working from home. But so wherever you're at, you're always welcome to contact me. I believe my email is on the website, and if you can't find it on the Fulbright IIE website, then you can find it on the comexis.org.mx website, and I'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
Great, and I'll be sharing that website again just in the next slide. Let's see, so we have a question. Actually, this would be for you, Jackal. Are there limits on applications from emeritus faculty? So emeriti faculty, can they apply?
Of course they can, especially for this position of the U.S. Studies Chair. We had one, how do you pronounce it? Emeritus?
Emeritus? Uh-huh.
Emeritus faculty, who was so popular, we had to place him in two different of the universities.
Oh my goodness.
So he was really, really popular. I think that's what a lot of times what the universities are looking for is a ton of experience and a lot of knowledge. So he was very popular. So I highly recommend you applying for this award.
Excellent. We have a question for Dennis. Dennis, if your family were not able to join you on the Fulbright, do you think you would have still enjoyed your time in Mexico?
Maybe I would have enjoyed it more, but let's see how it goes. It was a wonderful experience to have everyone together, and of course everyone's got to figure out their own family situation, but yes, I think it would have been fabulous. I think if my family had stayed at home, they probably would have made a couple trips down to Mexico during the semester, and we would have kept that connection that way. I was thrilled to have the family there, but it also posed lots more logistical challenges, you know, finding schools for the kids. And in the end, it was well worth it, but it does add another layer of challenges.
Sure, and you mentioned that your kids were in a local school or a Spanish-speaking school, is that right? So they got really interested.
Yeah, we found a bilingual school, sort of a British-Mexican school that was in our neighborhood, and that's where they attended. So they don't speak Spanish, but they were sort of immersed in the Spanish in school. Most of the students spoke English because they'd been learning it since they were young, and so it was a really fascinating and challenging environment for them, and I'm really thrilled that we were able to provide that cultural background for them.
Excellent. All right, the next question we have is for Jackal. How strictly is intermediate Spanish language, required if you are applying to the Science and Technology Award for research only? So in other words, Can you speak a little bit about that?
Sure. We've had a lot of very successful STEM. A few years ago, I've been with Comexis for 6 years, and when I first started, it was almost all social sciences that were the scholars of the program, specifically because of the language requirement. The way we define the language requirement now is enough Spanish to be successful at your grant, okay? So we had a mathematician a few years back who spoke zero Spanish, and the people who interviewed him said that he was so amazing that he wouldn't need Spanish for his mathematics project that he was proposing, and he was highly recommended and got the grant. Fortunately, he came with his wife, who was a lawyer and a Spanish speaker, and she, who also got the grant, and she was able to translate for him. So he was very successful. But it's not a requirement if your grant doesn't require it. So if you're in, if you make an agreement with the university that you're going to be teaching, for example, outside of the U.S. Chairs grant, but they want you to teach in English and you're teaching mathematics or engineering or whatever it is, that's fine. We also had the Carlos Rico award this year go to a STEM scientist, a STEM researcher, who did forestry, and her Spanish wasn't very high level, but she managed. And a lot of times what we find is if you have somewhere in the basic to almost intermediate level, being here in an immersed environment will help a lot. And there are people willing to translate as well.
Great.
Yeah, if I could just add a little bit, I know it's a different grant, but for the U.S. Studies Chair, my Spanish is, intermediate at best, but for my placement, it was absolutely not necessary. And I think that's one of the things that people ask me about after I've returned, or when they found out I was going, they're like, how are you going to Mexico? You don't speak Spanish. Well, that's part of the point, right? I want to go down with my limited Spanish. I got a Spanish tutor. I worked on my Spanish while I was down there. And so at least for the U.S. Studies Chair, it's certainly open to people who speak and teach in English.
Definitely.
Right. And the next question, Dennis, would be for you. What advice do you have for applicants? We've gotten a couple questions. What advice do you have for applicants in terms of the project statement and proposing courses when you don't know what that will look like. So how did what did you propose, and how did that play out in terms of what you actually taught?
So I proposed, I think, three courses. I ended up teaching one of those courses. I think the advice is just to make a course that sounds interesting, that shows who you are and what you're interested in. You know, it's not necessary to, you know, this is all about presenting you and what you're interested in. And because if you're teaching what you're interested in, then your students are going to be interested in it as well. And so that's my advice. My project was something like making sense of U.S. politics in a polarized and uncivil era. So I, you know, proposed a course on civility and polarization and that sort of stuff. But, you know, I didn't teach that. I ended up teaching a U.S.-Mexican relations class and then essentially a U.S. political, U.S. government sort of class. So I guess neither of them are what I proposed. I guess I would say just make it interesting and make it show who you are. The, you know, Comexis and the universities that you might be placed with will tell you what they need, and then you can adapt accordingly. So that's my advice in terms of the courses.
And please feel free to reach out to me, Jacqueline Tanelorn, to ask these specific questions, because I can. Like I said, we have this year we have a U.S. Studies chair who's doing architecture, and he wrote to me quite a few times, and he had said, like, what, you know, like this, I really want to come and I really want to do this, but, you know, what do you think about my idea? And I said, you know what, from my perspective as an American citizen, I think about architecture like, you know, what does the South look like, for example, in terms of architecture, and how does that portray the American history of slavery, for example? Or what do the plains look like? Or what are the, you know, what are the buildings, in, you know, that are important to the American, you know, people in on the East Coast where the colonies were first developed? So there's a way to teach history of the United States through your discipline. I strongly believe that. And I think that's one. And the other thing that I think needs to be shown in the application, in every application, is the binational importance. So why is this thing that you want to teach important for Mexico to learn? And that's the other piece.
Excellent.
And I also included, you know, what am I going to bring back to the U.S., right? So I think that bilateral part goes both ways, right? So what is it that Mexicans will really gain from having me there? And then how will I be a better teacher about things like immigration once I return to the U.S.?
That's very true.
Excellent. Yeah, no, those are really good points. We have another question. So for you, Jacqueline, would fine arts be considered in the humanities for that particular award if we have artists?
Yes, we love artists. And we put them in the social sciences and humanities category. They receive a little bit of a different treatment. Again, with the language piece, it's not always necessary. We have a researcher right now who's we have a couple of them actually, that are doing projects about kind of how language, how to move across when language is a barrier through artistic means, which is really fascinating. They also only require a terminal master's degree. You don't have to have a PhD, although we prefer PhDs, but we understand that a master's of fine arts is a terminal degree. So if you have more than 5 years of experience with a master's of fine arts, you're welcome to apply. And the other thing is that it doesn't have to be necessarily about specifically teaching or research. We consider the binational impact and importance of the way cross-cultural collaboration works in the arts. So it doesn't have to be framed exactly as a research project or exactly as a teaching project, but really as an artistic project that is of benefit to both the United States and Mexico.
Great.
Great. So we'll take a moment to get back to finishing the, we just have a couple slides left, so I wanted to hit on, we're getting a lot of questions about kind of technical aspects of the application. So I wanted to just go over the application components briefly and speak about what's required and what might be supplemental. So this is a good segue from the artist question. If you are an artist or an architect or journalist or creative writer, we do have supplemental materials that you would need to submit. It's kind of like a mini portfolio. And then if you're teaching, the couple of course outlines or syllabi. But essentially the requirements are the application form. And if you haven't started the form, I encourage you to do so, because once you start your application form, you'll have a better idea of what different things you need to look out for. You can start registering your two recommenders. They'll get an auto reply to their email so that they can start filling that in. You can start filling in the supplemental questions about why you're interested in Fulbright, things like that. You can also register your language proficiency evaluator, so the language proficiency report. If the formal report is required, please register that person. Typically, the person who can be eligible to fill that out would be someone who teaches Spanish at the college level, college or university level. And then the letter of invitation you can upload as well once you have that, if that's required. So those are kind of the essential pieces to the application. Keep in mind the project statement, the CV, and your outlines and bibliography do have page limits. So be sure that you condense things just to the essential information that the committee will need to view. Now, in terms of the project statement, let's see, can you see it now? Yes, okay, great. The project statement is 3 to 5 pages, and this is really going to be a key piece in the application. This is really where you get to shine and tell us what you plan to do, how you plan to do it, what the goals are of the project, the methods you'll be using, and also the anticipated impact, not only for the host institution and for your project, but also when you get back to the U.S. for your home institution. So all of that needs to be showcased in the project statement with as much detail and specifics as possible, also including a timeline. So that's essentially what you have in the 3 to 5 pages. You're not required to provide any citations or kind of footnotes or anything. All of that can go in your bibliography if you are proposing a research component. The supplemental questions I referred to in the last slide, those are actually now in the application form. So previously, if you've applied in the past, that was inbuilt. That was something that you had to address in the project statement. And we noticed a lot of people often forgot about that, or they might not have had enough space. We want to ensure that you address why you're interested in the Fulbright program. This is, after all, a public diplomacy program. And so every Fulbrighter who goes on a grant is a cultural ambassador. And so we'd like to hear about your interest in that. And why particularly Mexico, or why particularly the country you apply to? What is it that you're excited about? What is it that brings you to this country? Why are you applying? And speaking lastly about your adaptability and how you can handle kind of challenges or being flexible. We all know that the best laid plans are not always able to be carried out. I've spoken to several Fulbrighters, and even Dennis, you mentioned, you know, you proposed three classes and you were only able to teach the one out of all three. One was actually one that you taught. So again, being prepared and having everything, having a plan B and being ready to not understand everything and not maybe be familiar with everything, certainly that's part of the excitement, and you know, coming back to the U.S. Transformed is really what we hope that happens with every Fulbrighter. So speaking a little bit about that.
If I could just interject right there too.
Sure.
For scholars, we've had Mexican-American scholars, people who have been born in Mexico, have lived in the United States for a long time, or born in the United States, lived in the United States, Mexican-Americans, who also experience culture shock in Mexico, and they don't think they will at first, or at least some of them don't. So there is this way that, you know, I think it's really important to think about, you know, challenging situations that you don't underplay that, the importance of that question.
Great, yes. All right. Moving on. Yes, so now we're talking about affiliations and invitations. So again, not all of the awards to Mexico, and again, keep in mind, you can only apply to one award per competition, so it's very important that you narrow your options down, consider a couple of awards, and then narrow it down further. And the way you can do that is actually by, if the award allows you to seek out an invitation letter or make contact, to reach out to different institutions to gauge interest. Now, the one way you can find out if there is any particular host listed or if an invitation is indeed required is if you go to the award description, and I have a snapshot here, take a look in the second tab. A lot of people don't actually click through and check. They just stop at the award details. But the second tab is actually where you'll find whether the invitation is required and also if there's any contacts. The Comexis contact is listed there. There's other helpful websites listed there. So if an invitation letter is required or optional, keep in mind that it's a non-binding expression of interest. So if you do write to the host and they furnish a letter of invitation, they might also have furnished it to the other people who have asked for an invitation. So it's non-binding, but it is a key component to your application. Ideally, it should come from the person that you hope to collaborate with or the person listed in the award description who is the point person for the invitation. And of course, it should be on institutional letterhead. Beyond that, there aren't any particular, we don't have a template or a formula for the invitations, but keep in mind we do have guidance on our website, and I'll be happy to show that to you if we have time. We're down to our last 6 minutes, but keep in mind that we would like to see the details in the invitation that reflect what you've put in the project statement. So how long you'll be invited for, where you're going to be placed, who you're going to be collaborating with, what exactly you're going to be doing during that time, and what benefit it has to the host institution, and really that sense of excitement of having you there. So speaking about all those points, that's really important to go beyond kind of the boilerplate perfunctory, yes, we welcome Dr. So-and-so, he or she will be doing this and that. We really do want to see what impact you'll have and kind of the benefits. The other thing I'd like to point out before we move on is that the host institution is not required, in this case, I think for all of the awards in Mexico, there isn't any financial contribution required. So check the award. There are some awards in our catalog. I mean, we do have over 135 countries represented. But keep in mind that there, unless otherwise stated, there should not be any contribution or any expectation from the host. So if they feel that they don't want to write a letter because they don't know about the financial contributions or ramifications of them hosting you, let them know that you are applying for a Fulbright and you'd be coming under the auspices of the Fulbright program and the stipend is paid through Fulbright. If they'd like to offer you an office or, you know, kind of access to the facilities and labs or libraries, that's wonderful, but it's not required, but anything that they do offer you should be outlined in the invitation as well. Is there anything else, Jackal, on this slide that you'd like to bring
up? Just regarding that, like we don't like it if host institutions do not offer an office space or various resources from the university. Mm-hmm. So if you get a letter of invitation and then you arrive to Mexico and find that your host isn't as cooperative as you would like, please let us know. And we will work with that university to give you some, you know, dedicated attention.
Yes, no, absolutely. Oftentimes we do see that at the minimum office space is given, but again, if some hosts, you know, can't commit up front, but certainly I think the commission is there to assist in these kind of situations, and we do want our Fulbrighters to feel welcome at their host institution.
Exactly.
Great. All right. And then I just wanted to point out some of the successful past projects, including the Carlos Rico Award project that Jackal alluded to earlier. So here are just a sample of types of projects that have been done in the recent past. So again, a wide range of disciplines and projects. All right, so let's take a look again at the question box. We just have maybe a couple minutes, so maybe get to a couple more questions. And I want to thank Dennis, if you have to log off. I appreciate your time and your insights that you shared. Once again, thank you for sharing about your Fulbright experience. And if you don't mind, am I able to share your email if anybody would like to get in contact with you? Is that something that's okay?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, great. All right, so if anybody has any questions, you can reach out to me. I'm just going to share the next slide. The Comexis information is in the award description. I've also chatted into the chat box for all of the for all of you online, Jackal's email address, so you have that as well. If you have any questions about the application process or you'd like to ask me questions about the Fulbright program, please email westhem@iie.org. That's, again, for Western Hemisphere, westhem@iie.org. Okay, so let's just get to one last question. Jackal, this is for you. Can we apply for the Border Scholar Award if we're not teaching in the region? And I think the answer to that is you must be located in one of the border states. Is that correct?
Yeah, if by within the region, you're not in the border region. We did have somebody apply from San Francisco. It was in the, I mean, we just said California, Arizona, New Mexico, or Texas, with the kind of understanding that it was a border region. But somebody applied from San Francisco, and they did, although they didn't get the award, the question that got brought up was, will this travel allowance be enough to, like, have you be, go to Mexico, like, because it's basically 1 week out of the month, 8 days out of the month is what we consider to be covered. So, you know, what can you do with the amount that's being offered? So if you're in one of the states but you feel like you're farther away from what's might technically be known as the border, you're welcome to apply, but just keep that in mind.
Okay, great. Well, I think we're just about at time, so I want to be cognizant of everybody's schedule. Thank you so much to our panelists, Jackal and Angelica and Marin and our alum, Dennis Plain. Feel free to email me if you'd like to get in contact with him. And again, if you haven't if we weren't able to get to your question, please email me at Westhem, or if you have a very specific question that you'd like to ask Jackal, you can contact him directly. I see that we weren't able to get to everyone's question. Keep in mind this webinar has been recorded, so if you were only joining us kind of midway through, you're welcome to view the entire webinar next week once it's on our archive. Thank you so much, everybody, and have a wonderful afternoon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.